Welcome back, Real Nerds. It's time for some more Real Talk. I'm Scott.
And I'm Bobby.
And it's time for another Real Nerds Real Talk podcast here on the good old interwebs. So trying to get it started here, we're gonna jump right into it. We kind of got a long list of stuff we want to talk about. And to start it off, we're going to start talking about the last month of our schooling. And we're going to talk that off with Bobby because my last month was pretty boring.
Well, yeah, you're just getting back into it, though.
Hey! It's my stuff. Sorry. I only have like three sentences.
Last month was the weirdest class that I've had so far at Full Sail. It was the most difficult in terms of communication.
Oh, okay. I was like, what?
Yeah, no, like doing the class content wasn't bad, but figuring out what they wanted, what the professors wanted, was really tough because it was hard to get in touch with them. I was transferring schedules at the time, but while I was in that class, I was nowhere near around when they were available.
So like, it was just like communication on like, would you say it's communication on their part, or is this because of how the schedule of being communicated to is structured? Because like for your schedule, I would say,
I think it was a problem of them, the way they designed the classes. They have like 24 different classes build a game together. So the way our class came in, they had just finished the last game. So we were just starting up a new one, basically, with nothing there. And the class was designed to be worked as a team throughout the whole class, basically.
Okay.
Which you would do towards the end of a game. As we're starting with nothing, they were just like, well, ignore that, ignore that, ignore this, and the instructions, and just do it yourself. Do all individual work.
You'll figure it out.
But the thing is, they were telling everybody this in the lectures. And there was some bad luck involved this month where the teacher had recorded like the first four lectures and then there was no audio in them.
Oh, well, so it was just like, was it just like somebody on the screen just like waving their hands up and down?
Yeah, basically. So he didn't even release them to us, the people that couldn't attend. And basically just kind of said, hey, everyone that was able to be here, if your classmates have questions, please pass along the information.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay. That's cool.
Become my messenger birds.
Yeah, so, you know, luckily I've gained a few friends along the way throughout my degrees, and they're in the same class as me, so I was able to kind of have information relayed from some of them. But it was neat. The goal of the whole class was in Unreal Engine to select two mechanics for a golf game that were in the backlogs of the Trello board, and kind of design a brand new Trello card with like really well done checklists, attachments, things you want to do, final products, reproduction checklist.
Okay.
Like how you would duplicate the steps, because once you're out of the class, they're not going to ask you anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we use a Trello board for our stuff, and there's a lot of cool automations you can do where you can like add in, and you can just pull over checklists from other projects and stuff, so it's really useful.
Yeah, so it was neat. I mean, I designed pipes for mini golf, so you know you can imagine how those work.
Yeah, every time you say pipes, I just think of Mario, like the pipes from Mario, and then just being like these, you know, like the green circular pipes, but above ground, and then like that's where the ball's going through, and that's how I choose to view it.
Yeah, and you know, if for those of you that might not know how a video game pipe might work. So, you know, in real life, the ball would go in the one side, roll through, and come out the other. In a video game, the ball would touch the entrance of the pipe, become completely destroyed from the universe. A timer would go on, initiate how long the pipe would be, and then after that timer, a brand new ball would spawn at the end of the pipe as if it had rolled through.
Yeah, and then I guess you could like stack animations on that to make it look more like realistic, but it would just be an animation playing. It wouldn't actually be that same ball moving through the pipe. Like, there's no actual ball moving through the pipe. It's just a resemblance of what you think it would be.
Right, yeah. The smoke and mirrors would be the timer. You could add, like, a rolling effect, you know, some kind of ball sound going through the pipe or something.
And then maybe if you want to animate, like, the pipe to look like it's bulging, I'm sure that there's a way to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what they do in, you know, Pokemon trading.
Yeah.
You know, the Pokemon's not going through it. It's just this little pixels enlarged.
Yeah, and then they move the only thing that's actually moving, I guess, on the screen would be, like, the dots that make it look like it's you know, moving. Like, yeah. It has, like, those the old school, like, fast-moving lines, you know,
where,
to make it look like it's going somewhere. But, yeah, it's just, you know, sending the data over and saying, you know, hey, this person no longer has this ID number Pokemon and now has this one, and then vice versa on the other side. And that's basically all it's communicating, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty, like, I mean, I was in the game design for a little bit, but Bobby's definitely way farther than I got. And but I mean, a lot of the themes, it's kind of crazy because the themes of game design and is pretty much the themes of everything when it comes to like technology. It's how do we replicate it so that the end user sees it or interprets it as natural or the way that they think it should happen or whatever, instead of it being like, you know, this is actually happening. Like, I'm actually coding. Like, I think a lot of people in general would assume that you code, like, or do something in the program to make the ball go through, right?
Right.
Like, that's
right.
Your first assumption. Like, how did they make the ball go through? They must have had to, like, do something in the code or whatever. Like, however this person would think. But that's, I feel like that's the general populace that doesn't maybe have a coding background or any kind of design background with Unity or Unreal. So it's, like, it's kind of interesting that it's not easy to make a game, but it is, in a sense, easier to comprehend that than it is to comprehend how to make something do something through a virtual space, right? It's like, how do I make this thing move? Like, it's not even a question about, like, you're asking the wrong question, really. And when you're coming to the game design world, it's like, how do I make it appear here and appear here, right, and make it look like it's doing the thing you think it is doing?
Right, because the overall goal is, and the overall question is, how do I make the player feel more like they're a part of this world? You know, you're trying to make them feel like they're actually there, and if things are happening that just throw them off out of nowhere, like, you know, you're supposed to push this door open and it slams shut.
Yeah, that'd be weird. And I think the whole, like, and I always bring it up, it's like the whole thing with, like, the there's a whole book, you know, that somebody wrote about how doors should be set up, like, in real life. You know, like, there's a little, like, I can't remember the documentary I watched about it, but they talked about this guy who literally wrote a book about it. It could have been a female, too, or a girl. I don't really remember. But it was literally about how, like, doors are set up to work, to move a certain way so that it doesn't fight with human instinct. Like, you know, the push and pull, and why, like, why there's a handle and a push bar, or why there's a pull handle instead of a push handle, you know, different things like that. And then, like, how the door would be on the left or the right side with the actual hinge and stuff. And, like, because people's brains are just wired to work a certain way, even with something that wasn't actually, like, invented for a little bit from, like, the beginning of, you know, humans. But, like, we just naturally know that we want it to be open or closed from this side or whatever like that. And I think that's crazy interesting because it really feeds into the fact that you really, if you fight human instinct, you know, you kind of have to do it, you know, caressingly, or people are going to get mad and just be like, no, I'm not playing this.
Yeah, to do that, you either have to do it gently here and there, or your whole game has to be about nothing's what it seems, I feel like.
Like, it's not based off reality at all.
Yeah, everything weird is going to happen, expect it, and just look out for anything.
So, unless you have anything else you want to add about your last month of class...
No, it's over and done with. Let's move on.
You're sad about it? It's like, I'm not sad about it being over because I missed the class. I'm sad because I had to think about it again.
You know what? I'm sad that now I'm not in Unreal Engine anymore. I'm in Unity again, and I kind of like Unreal. But besides that, I'm glad to be past that class.
Unreal Engine 5 had their whole, like, spoiler, or not spoiler, I don't even know what they called the event, but they, you know, they showcased a lot of the new stuff with it, and, like, the how they rendered. I think they gave, like, to a couple people, that, like, a team or whatever, to build out that animation, you know, like that movie kind of thing we saw on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. It really is. And I watched some of the in-depth stuff about, like, what new features they're going to have, and, like, the lighting and the crazy amounts of stuff you can populate on the screen because of how it uses, like, micro small things, and you're gonna have, like, a crap ton of triangles. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
it's like the triangle. I thought the triangle conversation was gone a while back, but it's still here. Like, we're still talking about triangles, polygons on polygons. Like, they, I think one of the things I saw was they actually populated, like, I think this might have been a user based one, but it was like their dog on their bed or something, and they populated 1,000 times at, like, full resolution or whatever. And at, like, 60 frames per second. And I'm like, that's, you know, it looks stupid, but I'm like, that's, like, I hate when frames drop. Like, it's the worst. Like, you just feel like your game's bugging. But, okay. But anyways, getting back to school stuff. So my last month of school, obviously, I just started my new schedule for the cinematography degree this month, so a couple days ago, actually. So my last month was pretty boring, kind of just was working on RRT stuff. So that's actually going to lead us right into the next thing, which is the next month of school. So this is going to be the time period where we kind of talk about, you know, what we expect the next 4 weeks to be. Obviously, we have access to the first week. Sometimes we have access to other weeks, but really until you're in that week, you really don't understand what's happening, or to the fullest extent, at least. And I'm going to go ahead and start it off because I have art. It's art history. And it's an interesting class because I actually was going into this thinking, you know, I knew I was going to be getting three classes that were not core classes to my degree, but were just, you know, kind of electives and general education that I just didn't have yet. Because most of mine are pretty much done there. But I was like, you know, this is going to be easy. You know, art. How is art hard? And it's not like I'm not about to say it's hard. Honestly, the class is pretty cool. And it's pretty simple in the sense that, like, I get it. But you know, and the grading structure is really nice for this class too, as well. Like, there's not a lot of like 2% things, which is something that Full Sail sometimes does with certain classes, or I guess certain teachers do. You'll have like 10 assignments and they're worth 2%, 3% each or whatever. And it's like, why? Please. Well, I mean, sometimes it's a pro because, like, you know, you don't have to, like, if you fail one thing or whatever, it's not that big of a deal, but I'm not a big fan of that. But, I really thought it was going to be kind of a boring class. I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at. So like simple to me always kind of sounds boring, but it's not. I actually was doing the first couple assignments yesterday and the day before. And I, you know, this class actually has a book that we have to go through and they want us to read 5 chapters a week. You know, that's not a big deal, but I was like, I'm not a big reader. I'm not. And, so I try to skim, but I was skimming, you know, as my first go for through the book, I was like, wow, this is actually pretty interesting because the first couple things we were learning about, and it was ancient art, and we started through a couple different categories of that, which was like prehistoric art in Europe, art of the ancient Near East, art of ancient Egypt, and you know, ancient Greece and the Etruscan and Romans. So like, I'm a huge Greek mythology fan. Love it. I'm actually kind of sad we're not doing Far East until like week 4. But the cool thing is that I really am a huge Scorpion King fan and Mummy fan and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people don't realize that those things really took place in the Middle East, Middle East and Egypt. Like, you know, that's, you know, the Horn of Africa. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened in the past in those areas because that was, you know, where most people kind of came from in the sense, you know, Africa all the way up to the Middle East, you know, through the world. So, you know, there was these, you know, they talk about in the Scorpion King, the actual movie, the Scorpion King, with, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the best actor in the world. He was an Akkadian, which was like a dying race or, you know, a dying breed of people. And I actually thought that, you know, it was really cool. Like, there was first of all, the name is dope, Akkadian. Come on. And, like, they were supposed to be, like, these elite people. I knew, you know, just basically that. Like, obviously, The Rock's dope. He's doing cool stuff. He's kicking butts. I'm like, Akkadians are dope. Like, I would see was why these people are pretty pretty awesome. You know, and they are pretty cool, but their history is pretty crazy. Like, huge wars. You know, like, they were part of, like, they kind of branched off the Sumerians and stuff like that. And I'm learning this from, like, art history. And I was like, this isn't something I thought I would learn from art history. This is something I thought I would learn from, like, world history or specific history for that area. But it's an art. And I'm like, this is really cool because I really do dig art and how it kind of can translate into your mind into, like, some kind of emotional feeling. So this is kind of like art as a way, as a form of, you know, transcribing the events or something. It's like it's funny how people really think about it. It's like, you want, like, even now we're making a podcast for people to enjoy for hopefully years to come. You know, art in general, for some reason, always in the human psyche is like, I want this to survive. And I want somebody to know what I was doing or what I was thinking or what was happening. And I think that's just really insane to think about, like, fully, you know? But besides the art, you know, the history art stuff, you know, going into, like, really cool categories, and I'm hoping that's probably the theme for the rest of the class. But, you know, going through the rest of the 3 weeks, I basically can only see a couple things. You know, we're doing medieval Renaissance art, early modern art, and then world cultures and traditions. So it sounds like it's going to be a pretty cool class when it comes to, like, learning cool information. And I think I'm going to be able to really broaden my ideas about different things and, like, you know, noticing different things in art or in modern art that are maybe derived from ancient art and be like, oh, okay, that's why it's in this movie or why it's in this TV show, because it actually has, you know, meaning to this. Whereas before, you might not have noticed those things. So I'm really excited for that, to be honest. Yeah. And after that, we got Bobby on his next month.
Yeah, all that stuff sounds really cool, man. And for art, I was going to say, like, I would assume the farther back you go with art, that becomes, like, just the history.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how they kind of recorded stuff back then.
I guess the art would definitely outlive, like, maybe a paper copy.
Yeah, know? Well, I mean, even art transcends words, and maybe they didn't have written words at some point, you know, when you're
facts.
At some of the art you're looking at. So that could have been their way of, like, hey, this happened, this is why this looks that way. Or, hey, this happened, let's make sure it doesn't again because it was awful. Or, yeah. Hey, this was great, this was a time of awesomeness, and, you know, hey, this is when we celebrated, and let's remember it.
Yeah, this is how you plant seeds. Don't forget. Oh, and if you do forget, just check out this thing I drew you. It shows you what to do. Exactly. No, I agree.
The
I mean,
hall of memories.
Art can be commercial. It can be industrial. It can be emotional. I think that's kind of crazy because, like, art is literally, I mean, not to get on an art kick, but it's like, it's art is kind of everywhere. Like, literally everything has art in some way, I feel, because somebody had to either design it or think about it, conceptualize it, have a question. You know, it's like art and philosophy are very intertwined, I feel like, because art can be like the solution to the question sometimes.
Yeah, and just like in philosophy too, I feel like everyone can come at something a different way. And in art, everyone's got their own unique style, and that's what makes it really cool too.
Yeah, that personal touch, I think, really makes it relatable, as well as, like, just, I don't want to say normal, but it makes you feel like, maybe it makes you feel normal. Because, like, there's a bunch of other crazy people out there like you. You know? Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, hey, you know, I'm not the only one who thinks this is cool. That's dope. But enough about art. Let's talk about game art. And I'm like, I don't know if you're doing game art. What the hell are you doing this month?
No, so this month I'm doing game development. And what that entails is state machines and working with...
state machines?
Yeah, so a state machine is...
Is that like the state of a thing? Like, what state is it in?
Yes, and the transition of the state.
Okay, okay. So, yeah, pull me on that.
Yeah, what happens in between? So, like, for example, the most basic one you could probably work on would be a light switch.
Okay, okay.
Is it on? Is it off? And you know what happens when it's on and off. But there's a transition in between that where it clicks and it, you know, goes from one to the other. And that's what the state machine runs, all of that, and makes sure that it... there's no kind of error.
So is it like a checking thing? It's like it's just constantly checking for what it's at?
In a way. So in a video game standpoint, I guess, imagine Mario. He's in the idle state, he can do a couple things. He can jump. So he goes from idle to jump back to idle.
And by idle, you literally just mean standing still, not moving.
Just standing, okay. Yeah. He can go from idle state to death if something touches him while he's not moving. So that plays the death scenario.
Because a Koopa could just walk into him.
Right, so then that would be death. That would be idle to death to respawn back to idle.
Okay, so it's telling it how to load whatever next scene or something, kind of like
exactly. Like, but
how to move it,
but for that specific object or
specifically to the object. Then
yeah, and so it could be a player pawn. It could be a tumbleweed that rolls across the screen and then disappears in a certain area, and then a new one appears and does the same thing over and over.
So would a Koopa also have a state thing? Because yeah, it has, like, because it could die, right? So then it would have its own states.
So a Koopa would be, I mean, I guess it would have an idle state while it's off screen.
Yeah, or if it's like one of those standing Koopa. I mean, I think there are certain Koopas that just stay still, right?
So the ones that stay still throw stuff generally.
Okay, so that'd be a state of, like, throwing.
Yeah, so they probably have an on state and then, like, death or something state, like that. So when imagine they appear on the screen. We'll just talk about the turtle that walks. Okay. It'll have the walking state, and then it can be, if Mario jumps on it once, it can be the, we'll just say...
Oh, the scoot, like where it kind of scoots down?
Yeah. I'm stuck state. If he jumps on it again, it can be sliding, or in some Marios, if you're holding B, you can pick it up and throw it, which then would go back into a sliding state.
Okay. So it's like managing what should be happening at each state.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I noticed this, so it should be doing this. I noticed this, it should be doing this. And if like I'm missing an error, it's just like, hey, if this doesn't happen, there's something wrong.
Yeah, so like if you didn't think about, oh, if Mario is standing still and he gets hit by something, go to death state and respawn. If you only thought about that happening while you were running and you hit something, okay, or if so you jump and hit something, okay,
yeah,
you might have an error or a bug in your game that players figure out where if they stand still, they won't die.
Yeah, because there's no state of death that's connected to that state.
Exactly, because okay. You as the designer didn't think about that.
That is interesting.
Yeah, so that's one big thing I'm working on this month. And then I'm working on navigation mesh for AI.
Navigation mesh for AI.
Yeah, so what that is...
Every time you say something, I just want to guess, honestly.
You want to guess?
I do want to guess.
Go ahead.
All right, so navigation mesh AI. So a mesh, I think... navigation, I'm going to put to the side for a second because that's kind of obvious. But mesh, I'm guessing, is kind of just like your field of movement. Like how... Like this is like the... Like in all directions where that thing could maybe possibly go before you tell it where it should be going. Where it's like constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And then navigational would just be the connection to that, like... You know, how it navigates. And then the AI portion, I'm actually kind of touched on this one. I'm thinking that it's just you're going to give it, say, you know, 8 instructions and it can make any of those movements. And then they'll have states connected to them maybe that would, you know, counter those things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say you're pretty on point with most of it.
I didn't Google this, I promise.
So for this one, I'll use the example of like a zombie from Call of Duty.
Old school? Where does it matter?
Or we'll just say any zombie. It doesn't really matter. Just a zombie type motive where it's coming after you.
Okay.
So for the nav mesh, you're right about the mesh being on there that would show the AI where it can move along the entire terrain or like plane of existence.
Gotcha.
And as the designer, you can set various obstacles that are things that it can't go on. Like say there's a wall, you don't want them to be able to go
over. Fly zones, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. You can't touch this, have to go around it. It's an obstacle. That can be set into the nav mesh. So then it kind of like, imagine you have a piece of paper that's completely covered with mesh.
Yeah.
You cut a hole out of it. So now there's nothing right there.
Gotcha.
You know, that's what the obstacle would be. It's the okay. AI sees it as nothing. So it can't even enter that.
It's literally a non-existent thing to touch.
Yeah.
So it's funny just because I don't want to lose this real quick. It's funny because players complain about invisible walls.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, looks like our it looks like NPCs have to deal with it too. So
yeah, and the thing is, so you don't want the NPC to look stupid. You want them to kind of seem like they're making smart choices and doing.
Okay,
things
so not like just smacking a wall and being like, turn around.
Yeah, you don't want them, or you don't want it to run to a certain spot and just stop and stand there and do nothing, right?
Okay.
So you'll also be setting nav points, which are points of interest, points that are kind of the main areas along the map where you want them to be able to go to.
Okay.
And what they'll do is cycle through those points in a loop or to whichever one's closest to them, because you can have it set to either go in a loop or if they're chasing the player, if the player comes close and breaks them
how
off
far it will go, yeah.
Yeah, it'll go a certain distance, but then it'll run back to the closest nav point.
Okay, yeah, we've seen that in games too, actually. Like,
yeah.
World of Warcraft, RuneScape, things like that. Like, you know, they'll be like, "Well, you're too far, and I can't leave this mesh zone." Exactly. Basically, so.
And the easiest one, probably, right, like off the top of my head, is Call of Duty Mobile. If you go to the farm, there's this big zombie monster that spawns in the middle of a field.
Oh yeah, and if you back out too far.
Yeah, he'll only come out if you're close enough and touching the ground, and if you back out too far from the radius, it'll disappear.
I think they definitely updated that because, like, I mean, we've jumped in and out of that game. And I think the first time I played that, you could go farther back.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we shot him from the helicopter before, too. But, you know, they definitely did change that. Or they definitely, it's not that way anymore, at least, if it did change. But, because, yeah, we experienced that the last time I was on. And I was like, what the hell? Like, why does he keep despawning? Like, I'm still here. But I guess it's because they don't want people to, like, you know, because it's easy. Call of Duty Mobile's a little bit easier, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd say that for sure.
All right, so navigational mesh AI is a pretty dope concept. And I think that, I mean, I feel like every game player has come into contact with that at least once, if not you know, hundreds of times.
Yeah, I mean, if you've played anything with AI that moves based on you coming into a radius with it.
So, like, a spaceship could do the same thing, too, right? Because, you know, you work in three dimensions. So, like, you could say, like, a spaceship could go from here to there to here to there.
A spaceship is... So, if you're talking about a spaceship that would be fighting you as an enemy?
Well, just in general, like, you're think of WoW, but, like, instead of there being a floor, like, the ground, it's, you know, you have space all around you. And yeah. There's an enemy that's in a spaceship, and he has, like, a certain area that he patrols.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, if you go too close, he'll attack you, you'll attack it, blah, blah, blah. But, like, because of the plane, the mesh, is it a flat plane only, or can you make it? Can you, or have you not learned that yet? Can you, like, I'm not sure if it's a thing. Can you make it where it has, like, maybe a X, Y, and Z or Z for our European friends?
So for that, depending on, you know, whatever your preference would be, you would use a sphere collider or a box collider probably, and then set the dimensions of it to be like, okay, if it's within
blah, blah, blah,
10 units in all directions of my box, if it comes into that close of a contact, then the spaceship will register that it understands it's there and start interacting with it.
Okay, so it's more of a question of use a different tool.
Yeah, it would be a trigger mixed with some script that told it what to do once whatever entered the trigger, you know, supposed to activate it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else you're looking forward to or learning this month?
I'm just curious where it's going to go because it's only week one and I've learned a lot so far and it's been a cool class. So, you know, by week four, I'm sure I'll be making some really cool stuff.
Yeah. It sounds like this is really going to, really upgrade your game making abilities, to be honest. It's almost like a level up class.
Yeah. Because now I can really start working with AI a little bit more, you know, putting them in my games and making them go attack the player.
I feel like making cool AI is... Or maybe cool is the wrong word, but making good AI is pretty important, I feel like. At least, my complaints with games are always, like, the same. I want something to matter, and I want it to always matter, and blah, blah. But if you can make AI that can reflect the mattering, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah.
Then that's, you know, that can maybe make me feel better about a game, because I feel like I'm, you know, influencing. Not just, you know, the AI being like, haha, you did this thing, and because we noticed you did it, it's good. But, like, you know, literally, like... having a difference, like, I don't know.
So that is why I kind of want to study the Hello Neighbor AI.
Oh, because he's always learning.
Yeah, it learns from what you do, and then it...
I feel like it just learns waypoints. Like, if you, like, kind of going off what you just said, it kind of spurs that idea. It's like, maybe it's not as smart as we think. It's just registering and categorizing, kind of like Brittany's data science stuff. Being like, well, he's going this way, and it just registers that movement direction and goes... Well, after 10 times of seeing him do 10 different directions, I can calculate the best probability of where he's going to go.
I imagine it's probably a system of dictionaries that update, like rooms that it finds you in, hiding places it finds you in.
Okay.
So if you keep trying to go to the same room, maybe there's a list of rooms that it just goes to automatically at first, right? It just cycles through them, but then it finds you in the living room. So now the list updates to say, check living room first. And then go through the cycle.
And that just constantly updates?
Yeah, so now it finds you in the living room and then the dining room. So now it's going to check living room, dining room, and then everything else, and then back through the cycle.
Okay.
I'm just guessing.
It does sound a little chunky, but that does sound like it could work, too. Like,
well, it probably sounds chunky because that's a real amateur guessing what it
might be. I mean, we're all amateurs here. But it does sound interesting because, like, I feel like it could go a couple of different ways with that. Like, that could be the way. I feel because like it would be a way for it to learn, right? Learn is a strong word.
Technically, but learn.
Yeah, like it'd be updating its.
But really, its for it to learn, the player just has to perceive that it's learning.
It doesn't actually. Yeah, it could just be storing information, then just acting on that information, which wouldn't be. I mean, I guess that is learning in a sense. Like if I take in information and then I use it, that is learning. So, it's perceptual learning as well as real learning in a sense.
It is, but it would have to be a really intelligently pre-programmed setup.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, is it intelligent at doing one or two things, and it's like super intelligent at that, and then like just ridiculously dumb at everything else?
Can it write its own code is what I wonder.
So I guess that would be the big thing, because if it can write its own instructions on how to like to change, is that a thing?
I don't know. That's why I want to look into it.
I feel like that would be scary. You know, like that's if that's a thing, if that's not a thing yet, no, it's got to be a thing, because that's what, isn't like what mind or machine learning does, I feel like. I think like machine learning changes how it thinks. Or learn, I don't know. Anyway, maybe we'll get Brittany on the podcast one day when she, so she can talk about like this stuff, because literally Brittany does all this machine learning and data stuff, and it's beyond me.
She probably would know more about
it. It's crazy. We literally have two soon-to-be experts. I mean, Brittany's literally almost done her schooling. I mean, expert's a strong word, but, you know, expert compared to the person who hasn't gone through the schooling, you know, and almost becoming professionals. And then I'm just like this guy who tries a little bit of everything. So I get to talk to him about it. It's going to be cool.
You know, there's a part of me that really wants to just throw an application out at Jagex just to see what happens.
I mean, this is a podcast.
I mean, I think I probably will. Like, I'll probably make something in whatever engine I feel would best replicate the work that they do.
Java. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I think it wasn't a Java. Yeah, it was Java.
It was Java, but I think I could make it look similar in Unity.
I think I've seen a couple YouTube videos like that, but I think if you could make it more fun but somehow dumber, I think real old school RuneScape players would enjoy it. Because I feel like the problem is that every time you see, like, for lack of a better word, a clone, it's always somehow like nicer looking. Mm-hmm. And obviously the one thing that OSRS players don't give a crap about is animation.
Oh yeah,
they're just like, they got it. I mean, come on, we don't even need to talk about it, but they had like the whole like scuffle with the animation thing for the attack. I mean, come on, it was an uproar. So I mean, if you can make it dumber somehow, I feel like it would almost be like, just like, this is a great parody game.
Yeah, it'll be great. And you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll make a brand new skill and then a quest to unlock it, and you know, it'll just combine the two or something.
Yeah, there you go. And then, like, you know, we'll just link it to some black market gold places, and then we can give them, I mean, never mind. So Jagex, if you're listening, you know, by the way, Bobby talks about, he's a freaking crazy OSRS player. He was.
And I haven't played in a while, but time's been.
And yeah, we influenced your mining once. We had a podcast about that from back last year or something like that. So if you want to hear about what we did with that, make sure you check out that old podcast. I think it's even in the title, something about OSRS mining. But we were playing the stock markets. It was fun. I actually been thinking about getting back in OSRS just as like a side thing, because it's kind of just a fun game to play. But we're getting off a little bit off topic. What do you got left for us for the rest of your month? Or is that it?
Oh, that's it.
That's it. Yeah. All right. We'll, so it sounds like a lot of really cool stuff, though.
Yeah, it has been, and it will be, you know.
So next we're going to be getting into something that I'm very excited about. Bobby's definitely excited about, which we're going to make you guys excited about too right now. The studio. So we talked about it a little bit in the last podcast, which was like kind of our first podcast of this year. So we're waiting on funds to come in, which should be coming in this month, to completely finish buying all of the things that we need. That would include the couch, which is going to be a sleeper sofa as well, so when we have guests. You know, we're going to be getting a TV for that room, a surround sound system.
Totally clearing it out, sealing the floors up, getting carpet.
And we're going to be making videos on this as well. Basically, those are going to probably be the first videos we make for the most part, because we're going to be building the studio, and those are going to be some really nice videos to have. Honestly, also just for, you know, so I can look at them in a couple years or a year and be like, dang, this is what the garage looked like, you know, a year ago. That's always fun.
And this will be the third studio we've built.
Yeah, by your standards, four, but third is by my standards.
Yeah, we'll just say we had a 1.0, 1.1, and then a 2 and a 3.
Yeah, that sounds good. Or like a 0.9. You know, it was like alpha or whatever, beta.
This one, real quick, this one, I think, will be bigger than the last two combined, maybe even
definitely bigger all than of them combined. Yeah, it's the biggest one so far.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it'll be. I mean, it's a garage, so you know, but it's excellent.
I would say it's probably close to all three combined.
Like, being in a really tiny studio with a lot of equipment going, with not great ventilation, maybe not even a window that opens up, kind of is tough sometimes.
Yeah, especially on those, anything over 4 hours.
Yeah.
If you were sitting in there, you would get really hot.
And you know, you can't have a loud fan on with the microphone, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll ruin everything.
We're going to have a whole door that can let the heat out.
Yeah, and I mean we're going to be looking into getting cooling and heating units for the winter and the summer, because it does get a little cold in there, which isn't as big of a deal. Like heat would be is just kind of a nicety, but the air conditioning is probably going to be more of a necessity at some point. So we'll definitely look into getting something to do that. It might be just a fan, or like something that's just better than a regular fan. But on top of the TV and the surround sound, the sleeper sofa, we're going to be, you know, redoing the ground, like Bobby says, you know, sealing everything. But we're also going to be, you know, customizing the walls a little bit with some art and some other really cool things that you guys should check out when those videos are posted up on the YouTube. The YouTube. What do I keep saying? I like saying it like an old person.
What I'm really excited for, too, is to have a nice, big, dedicated virtual reality space. So if anyone loves or is interested in virtual reality, talk to us about it. You know, that's something we both really enjoy.
Yeah, speaking of VR, at the time of this recording, which is the 3rd of June, which will actually probably be the published date anyways, but I also published a new blog post about VR in 2021, and also kind of before 2021, I kind of go into like how I got influenced by virtual reality products and kind of how those last 6 years have led up to today and some other stuff. So check it out. It's really cool. It's only like a 4-minute read. It's on our website, realnerdsrt.com. Check it out. And there's some other good stuff on there as well. But what about the other stuff on the studio? I think that's mostly what I want to give away. Oh, you know, we are going to be getting some different supplies for like audio and visual stuff. Mostly audio.
Nice D&D table.
Yeah, D&D is going to be coming back. Might as well bring that up. I mean, we're gonna be doing that in video form, live form for certain things, but mostly going to be recorded content. We're also going to be recording our podcasts in the studio from now on. As of right now, we're recording a podcast in my bedroom. It just, you know, it works. It's whatever. But yeah, we're going to be doing that. We're going to get some soundproofing as well. I think that's all I kind of want to give away about the studio as of right now, because that was kind of a lot of specifics as well. But yeah, check out the video. We'll probably have a couple more blog posts about the studio as well at some point. Maybe just kind of how the idea was made up, and because we do have like some sketches I made, which is kind of funny. And it's changed quite a bit since the first time. Not super much, but definitely a decent amount. And mostly just like where we're going to do things. But next, I kind of want to get into... I didn't even realize this was the next thing. Probably should read ahead a little bit, but it's so... I started writing a book. Bobby knows this, actually.
Yeah.
So does Britt and a couple other people. But yeah, I decided I wanted to write, like, I actually decided a couple months ago, it was like 8 months ago probably, I wanted to write a book, but it was more of like a biography, autobiography. And I don't really like writing about myself. That's not really like, it's just weird. You know, like if you ever had crap going on in your life, writing about it, sometimes it's like cathartic. For me, it's just like annoying. So, and that's probably a lack of a better term at this point, but maybe in a couple of years, who knows? But I was like, you know, what would I want to read? Because I don't like reading. And like, it's a sad thing. That's why my kid likes to read. I made sure she read from a young age. But I was like, what kind of book would I like to read? Because I have read books. I just don't like to read books. And I really love sci-fi. You know, I don't care how hard a genre is to get into. I wasn't looking to make a huge, you know, or any money really from the book. I just want to make something that I'm proud of and, you know, also just is good. You know, at least in my eyes. You know, hopefully in other people's eyes too. You know, validation is always nice. But I just thought it'd be really cool to have like a whole world built. You know, like, because sci-fi I found, you know, out from research was, you know, you do a lot of world building, kind of like fantasy novels. And building out something is, like, fun for me. Like, you know, anytime we played, what was it, Minecraft, I was building. When we were playing Super Mario Maker, I was building.
You're a homebrew DM, man.
Yeah, I DM. So, like, I want to make stories. I think it's cool. And, you know, why not? And books are a good way to do that. So, yeah, I started writing a book. I started with kind of, like... You know, I'm going to have a blog post about this probably coming out soon about kind of like how I started specifically. But, you know, I basically got into the weeds with like what the people of this alternate world are going to be like and how they interact and how they, you know, deal with certain class structure issues. And then like basically how my protagonists and my antagonists, you know, evolve over the course of the book. And it's definitely changed a little bit here and there, but a lot of the ideas that I have kind of stayed in there for the most part. And I found that a lot of my ideas make it in because I actually kind of assume less than I actually needed. So the good thing is that I don't feel like I actually don't have enough room for them. And that was kind of something I was afraid of because a lot of people say, you know, you can't put a lot of things in or like, you know, you have to edit a lot of things out. Apparently, I just don't have that many ideas. I have enough ideas, but not that many. Like it kind of just equals out to what I need. So I don't know if it's a good thing yet, but it's working. The book, I don't really have a name for the book yet. You know, I've only written one chapter so far. I was trying to do this whole thing where I wrote a chapter a day. First book, that might be a little hard. So I'm doing like a chapter every 2 to 3 days. I was probably going to write a chapter here today or tomorrow. But I had a couple friends read the chapter one. Bobby hasn't read chapter one yet. And neither has Brittany, actually.
I haven't been offered chapter
one. Well, so here's my theory. It was actually from game design. I wanted people that were unfamiliar with the product.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's not saying you won't read it, but I wanted to get their input first and be like, hey, I'm writing something. This is my first chapter, rough draft. Don't worry about grammar, because somebody did actually mention something about grammar. And I was like, yeah, I didn't grammar check it yet completely. So, and he's like, you know, and I was like, you know, what do you think? You know, would you want to read a chapter two after reading that chapter? Things like that. And I don't even know if these are right questions. They're just kind of questions that came from kind of making those game design questions. And I feel good about it. Like, I mean, either he was being really nice and stuff, but it seems like I'm hitting the points I need to hit. And I'm not leaving too much on the table for the reader to not like imagine, which is really cool. Cause like, I didn't, you know, I've never written a fucking book, you know, I'm just gonna be honest. Like it's not super easy at all. You'd think just write it. Cause you have to describe certain things.
You know what? Real quick. I'm not going to throw you under the bus and mention my idea, but I'll just tell you guys, I'm really pushing him to do an extra podcast/blog, idea, and if he does it, it'll be really cool. If he does it,
which one?
You want me to say it?
Do you? Should I do? I honestly don't.
If remember. I say it, you're gonna do it,
but I don't remember.
You gotta do it.
I don't remember.
All right, so I really think.
Should you text this to me?
No, I okay. Really think that you should be doing a podcast or a blog about your process.
Oh yeah, no, I want to do the process.
Yeah, but you're getting farther into it.
Yeah, no, that's true. You're
going to forget the little bits and pieces. I mean, this is, honestly, for me, this is really interesting because probably there are a lot of people out there, even people that aren't interested in reading, that have been interested in writing a book, but they don't know where to start. And that's tough. Books are huge. And yeah. And for me, even as someone who is a creative and designs things, I have no clue where to start with a book. No yeah, clue.
A lot of research.
So exactly. And give us your findings.
Give us sir. The answers to the know? Book that might be shit crap. Like,
we want to hear the things that you've dove into those areas that you needed to find all this information, and you've gotten started. And that to me is probably the hardest part. I could be wrong, but we'll know more once you tell us.
It's the most annoying part, but it's also the most fun part. Like I have a love-hate relationship with research. I love it, but I hate it. It's like it's tedious.
You do a lot of it.
I do, but that's the thing is, it's not. Sometimes it's research for a specific thing I'm interested in, and sometimes it's just wandering curiosity. Like if I see something, I'm just like, yeah, that sounds cool. It's yeah. But I think a lot of people do that with like they'll go into the whole rabbit hole. It's just that my rabbit hole doesn't have to do with conspiracies. It's usually like intellectual things or video games or
yeah, like Scott. If like that. If Neil Tyson. Jumped down a hole in a tree.
Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, you put some respect on that name.
Dr. Neil Tyson said, hey, Scott, I'm late, and he jumped down a hole in a tree, Scott would be in there. He'd be like, we're going on an adventure, Neil.
Yeah, we are.
Let's go in. Let's do it.
Honestly, that's a dream of mine. One day I hope that this podcast has enough viewers where I can be like, hey, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, can you be on it for like 5 minutes? Just 5 minutes. That's all I want. Him and probably Gary V.
Yeah, Gary V. It would be really cool to meet
just
him.
Because I want him to cuss me cool out for like 5 minutes.
It'd be cool to meet both of them, to be honest.
I'm not a masochist, I promise.
Extremely. That'd be an amazing day.
You know what would be really cool? Have all, or not all, both of them on at the same time and have like a real conversation about, not necessarily maybe business, but like, because I mean, Gary V's got to have other interests besides just business. And I mean, obviously, it's you could see it in his businesses, but like, I feel like he would want to talk about really cool stuff, like with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, and like we could really explore some cool stuff. Like, I mean, there's always the obvious stuff about time travel and alternate universes, but I feel like you could probably tie maybe what Gary V's life has done into like conceptualism of like the world.
Gary V's the type of guy that will he'll find a way to make a reason for that type of thing to work for him. It doesn't matter what it is. He'll find a way that it can be good for him and most likely good for the other person too. And you know, he's just really good at doing that.
It seems like he likes win-wins.
Yeah.
I mean, he might win more than you, but it's still a literal win-win. And that's just because his reach is so far, but like, that dude is crazy. Like, I mean, like, you don't have to like love the dude or love everything he says, but like, if you watch some stuff, you'll get motivated. Like, I mean, even if you don't use his stuff, you'll get motivated. He's a very motivational speaker.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so the book is cool. The book is going good for right now. I'll leave you with this about it. It is because I really have to get this down, so I'm going to be testing this every podcast, and it's probably going to change. It's a sci-fi novel about a alternate world. Not universe, alternate world that is connected to Earth in some way. And the big issue that is happening on Earth, at least, is that the Earth is dying because of, you know, this is like in the future a bit. And basically climate change has turned into like Earth death. So we have like basically a limited amount of time, you know, to get the Earth back into shape where we're all going to go extinct. And, you know, they basically go looking for some stuff to like help them do that. And, you know, the protagonist finds maybe some certain things in a different way than you might expect. But, yeah, that's basically what I'm going to go with for right now as a summary, but it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a really cool adventure. There's a little bit of love in there. Not a lot. I don't think that should ever really be the focus. I think it should be like the sauce on top, you know, like just, it's just there, but it's not like the most important thing.
And for those of you that hate reading, remember, Scott does too.
Yeah, that's my key like draw. I'm like, you know, like, oh, you hate reading? Well, I wrote a book and I hate reading and I was able to read it. So you should read it. yeah. But so that should be it for that right now. We're going to start getting into gaming. So first things first, Horizon Zero Dawn, the Sony State of Play happened here the past week or so. It looks beautiful, and here's the kicker. Neither of us have played the first game.
Well, that's the thing, too. What's this new one called?
Horizons West Side Story? No, not West Side Story. Horizon Forbidden Zero. West. Horizon Forbidden West.
That's what it is. So, yeah, I'm coming at this from the angle of someone who has not touched the Horizon series. I guess this might just be the second one, so now it's a series.
They had a DLC or an expansion or something on the first one. I don't remember what it was called, but yeah, they did. I haven't played either, the new first one at all. But I think we're trying to get a PS5, so we'll figure out a way to play this game.
No, I did see the state of play, and especially like some of the really cool highlights from it, and it's a game that I'm interested in. I mean, it seems like it's going to be really story-driven. It probably has a lot of detail poured into the narration.
Yeah, it looks really... I mean, I'm always going to go back to the art. It looks beautiful.
It does. I mean, the art reminds me of when I was playing Monster Hunter World and I first dropped into, I think it's like the Coral Plains or something.
Oh, yeah, well, like the purples and blues.
Yeah, it's like they took the bottom of the ocean and kept it alive, but then put it on land. And it's just beautiful, you know. They put animals like that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now this looks like that. It's gorgeous, but also it has like this Zoid type mechanic,
the cybernetic, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's these beasts that are. I don't know if somebody made them, if they're engineered, but it seems like you are one type of person that can control them or hack into them. And now your objective is to kind of fight against a bad force that has learned to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's my only question about the game is that does hacking get harder? Because I hate hacking in games, especially when it's like when you're doing like lock picking. Second, why does the action in Horizons look so much better than Biomutant?
The movement?
Yeah, like come on, what's up with that? Biomutant was supposed to be beautiful movement. I don't know. I'm talking about Biomutant. I shouldn't be, but still.
To me, for Biomutant, it would be hard to.
They promise such beautiful movements.
It would be hard to deliver on that because imagine in Horizon you have characters that are always the same shape. Their mesh does not change whatsoever. In Biomutant, you can change the size and detail of your character to anything you want. And then it would still have to render that mesh the same way and move just as smoothly.
So I feel like they give you only like so many options.
Yeah, but there's a lot more. So in my head, I can understand. I mean, I could be wrong about why that's happening, but I can understand why it would be a little worse.
So you think it's maybe an optimization issue? Like where like certain things just couldn't be accounted for, or maybe they just weren't accounted for?
Maybe there's just hundreds of different possibilities of combinations and they didn't feel like optimizing movement for each one. So they probably took
like the most common ones or average.
Yeah, like maybe the 20 most generic things people might do or that the playtesters did and then optimized movement best around those. So, and then everything sort of close to that is kind of balanced.
So going on that kind of line of thinking, then you would almost be doing yourself a disservice if you customize your character. If this is true, obviously, it would be best if you actually picked one of the four kind of preset looking characters they have, because they would obviously make those the best working ones. So, I mean, could you be OP comparatively if you just use that? If you're correct, I'm saying.
No, I would be interested in testing that for sure.
That's interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah, well, so I'm kind of pulling from the way people would balance a game with many, many different types of opponents. You know, they would just find one. They would find one type and balance everything else against that one. And then everything would be,
So it's just like an algorithm comparing to the base model, basically.
Yeah, so if you have Rock, Paper, Scissor and, you know, Lizard, Spock, and you balance Rock and Paper, everything else
will balance based off of the base.
Well, you balance paper against everything else.
Okay.
So paper's been balanced against everything. So now you have Rock and Spock that haven't been balanced against each other, but they've both been balanced against the same thing. So they may be a little bit uneven, but they're going to be close enough, you know?
Okay. So they work, but it might not work. It's not the best, exactly. But it works.
It's a system that saves time. And if you're making an incredibly huge game, you might want to save time on some things that don't matter as much.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's almost like it's the niche use case, but because there's millions of possible users, the most niche case usually comes up at some point.
Well, speaking of niche, they may have outweighed having the ability to customize your character in any way and that type of niche over the perfect optimization of visuals.
Okay. Now, do you think it would be, if you're correct in that line of thinking as well, would it be beneficial for Biomutant to come out and say, like, hey, this would be like, if you want to have the best experience, use these characters? Because, like, it's not a multiplayer game. It's a single-player game.
If they were to do that to help users and to protect themselves, I would probably word it like, here are some optimized units. Feel free to test them out. You know, we're designing more. Or just put something out like that while in the back end you're really optimizing movement for any and every type of possibility somehow, or building an engine that can just do that.
Okay, so you want to, if you're going to do that, you might as well make sure you're doing the extra work in the back end too.
If you're going to care about it, but if not, you've put out the game the way it is, and that's how you care.
Worry
about
the
it,
sequel then, you know? Basically. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing, man. That's a real thing. Just put it in the sequel.
Yeah, for the sequel.
Because you have more time.
Or also you could just really work on designing that because it's an extremely cool feature, and it would be really cool to have that mastered and in your library.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they would put out a like a DLC or like, you know, a patch or something that would actually keep that game serviceable. But yeah, I mean, either way. So I think the other thing was the Bethesda Xbox showcase or the Xbox Bethesda showcase. So obviously Xbox owns Bethesda now, or ID. And the big thing that everybody, or at least I'm excited about, is going to be Starfield. I mean, RPG, check. Like, I've been getting into those a lot lately. Space, always been a check. And it's made by the people who make Skyrim, which should have an incredible amount of weight in this category.
Which probably pisses people off. I mean, well,
what? Why? Why would it piss people off? Because they're gonna make it the best game ever, and the other companies are gonna suck. Because like that didn't happen with RPGs. Skyrim is the best, but other RPGs still get bought.
If it's the same studio that's working on Elder Scrolls 6, people might be pissed off.
You think Elder Scrolls 6 is coming out soon? GTA 6 will come out before Elder Scrolls 6.
Let me tell you this: I have the list of things Microsoft announced for the lineup so far, and obviously, okay. I'm going to assume that there's going to be surprises thrown in there.
Hit me, bro. Hit me.
But Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 are the last two on the list, so they're going to be talking about it at least.
Okay, but what if... But so when Starfield was teased, it was kind of just like the world with the spaceship, and then it said like for Bethesda or whatever. So like, do you think that'll be Elder Scrolls 6? Like, it'll be a tease, and then they'll actually be talking about Starfield? Or do you think they'll actually talk about Elder Scrolls 6?
No, I don't know much about Starfield. Is it the one that we saw?
No, not Starbase.
Okay.
No, yeah, we're going to talk about that soon. Starbase is coming out in June. I cannot... Or it is June. It's coming out in 14 days, I think.
Right. So, yeah, Starfield I don't know much about, honestly.
I don't know anything about it either. I haven't looked into, like, leaks or anything, but like I'm pretty sure they have kept a pretty sealed lid on this one.
I just know Elder Scrolls 6 has been bugging people really hard for a while. Like, people have gone through the trouble of completely modding Skyrim
just to because be a different game.
Yeah, just because they wanted a more beautiful game, or they put different types of dragons and abilities and characters, even different storylines. Like, they swap NPCs and do all these
instead of a vampire, it's a werewolf.
There's a lot of really cool stuff they've done with it, people do with the mods, and it looks unlike Skyrim.
Yeah,
it's just like gorgeous.
I was never into the Skyrim games, and it's probably because the opening scene, I just don't like it.
I got into Skyrim because it was a big game, and I could play it offline. And at the time I bought it, it was because I wasn't playing without internet.
Was that on your Switch?
No, the Switch is when I bought it the second time, because I was I had enough money. I think I went Black Friday, and I was like, I have enough money to go get the Switch, a case, a memory card, and like a game at first, just one. And I decided to get Skyrim because I knew I'd be able to play it for like 100 hours before
ridiculous I long time. Game. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That game is forever. I don't think can you actually beat it?
Yeah, you can. And
can you 100% and not beat it? Because I'm sure it has a winning point. But I mean, can you?
It would take a while because there's a lot of side quests and some really annoying mini quests.
You gotta play, I don't know, blackjack.
Like, hey, you pick up this weird glowing gem in the middle of like a bar or something, and then all of a sudden it's like 0 out of 29. I think it's 24. But there are these gems that are hidden all over the incredibly huge map of Skyrim in random little nooks and crannies. And now your goal is to collect them all as a mini quest. So,
nice.
You know, make sure you look under everything while you're playing.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Now, speaking about Starbase, because we were just talking about it. Starbase is coming out June 17th. Actually, let me just double check that. Yeah, June 17th on Early Access on Steam. I'm excited about it. A couple of my friends are excited about it. Bobby is mildly excited about it.
mildly.
Just mild sauce. Yeah, so it's a voxel cubic kind of game. I don't know if everything is destroyable, but like ridiculous amounts of stuff in the game are destroyable. It's a space MMORPG, or I don't know if it's considered an RPG, but space MMO.
Starbase. Yeah, it sounds incredible. So everything is destroyable. I mean, it sounds like actually putting in the work to become, like, say you're in a clan and somebody's the crafter. They get their crafting level up. Cool, you have level 90, so you can make all the things, right? In this game,
that matters.
You code and wire your own things.
Yeah, you can create products.
You can. So if you're the person that learns to do that and you create this product that makes every spaceship do something that is an incredibly hard task into a really easy task, your clan's incredibly rich if you want to start selling that to people, because it's, you know, maybe hard to duplicate the code or maybe
use it to get minerals or whatever that you can sell faster than other people.
I wonder too if they have some kind of encryption type thing you can add into it, so if you build it and sell it to another person in the game, they wouldn't be able to just duplicate it and sell it.
Or read somebody else's code that's on that product. Like, you can somehow source code it and be like, oh, what is that running off of? And then see what their code is.
Yeah. And now,
or you could figure out a way to block it.
It's perfectly fine to look at what the thing's doing with the code and try to emulate it, but that's the thing. You're going to be trying to do what someone else has already done, and they're really good at it, so they're moving on to the next project now. So it seems like a game where investing your time in it would actually feel like a payoff, like something tangible in your hand almost.
Yeah, hopefully they give you like a code log, so like if your ship gets blown up, you don't have to like remember your code.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure maybe there will be something attached to your player, like where you can save screenshots or something of things you've built.
So yeah, you can just like copy paste it back in. Maybe, you know,
quote unquote blueprints, like save blueprint.
That'd be cool. Like, say, yeah, that'd be dope. I don't know if that's actually a thing. That'd be dope though. Now, Starbase is gonna have like capital ships as well as like smaller ships. And you know, you have to do stuff to get to be able to build those and stuff like that. But it is gonna be a kind of like, what is it? I guess you could say like, so like, I know they have like 1,000+ servers, or no, that's how many people can be on like a ship. Like a cap, like this a big ass capital ship. So you can have like, I think it might be a single, like not single server, but single server in the sense of like having mesh servers.
So what I've heard so far is that it is supposed to be one big server, so that, you know, if you're seeing somebody on there,
it's actually them.
Yeah, they're in the server, you know, that's the one. But there may be region-based servers.
So like, oh yeah, that's right, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's like the U.S. or the Americas, and then
yeah,
like Europe, Asia, something like that.
And that would be purely just so that you're not having a really horrible time playing because the server's in a different country and, you know,
different languages.
Yeah, that, or
they need a universal translator, man.
You're not getting the same signal as me with the server right next to me in the U.S., or I'm not, vice versa, if it's in Australia, you know.
That ping be crazy.
Yeah, so maybe they'll be able to do it. That would be incredibly cool. Maybe they'll be able to blend them all somehow. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, that'd be really dope, honestly. So that's definitely one of the games we're looking forward to. Biomutant was a game I was looking forward to until I saw some videos about. Like, the combat just looked weird. It didn't look like they did in the videos.
Let me say one. Go. Halo Infinite.
I mean, you're excited. I don't have a list.
Oh.
I don't have a list.
Oh, weird.
I have a list. He doesn't know.
Okay, yeah, so I'm excited for Halo Infinite because before I really got into Call of Duty, Halo was my jam.
The problem I always have with Halo is that because of Call of Duty, games like that have changed.
Yeah.
Because, I'm not going to say because of Call of Duty, but it's probably because of Call of Duty because it's popular. So, like, combat, if you want to call it that, or time to kill, or time to death, whatever, so much faster. Like, yeah, everything's so fast-paced. Halo was a slower... I mean, yeah, you could kill somebody with a headshot, for sure.
Now, I'm talking story mode, too. Story mode in Halo is one of my favorites.
But story mode only gets you so far, and the game kind of lived on multiplayer.
You know, so I've seen some things they've added to the story mode in some video content, and hopefully they've added them to multiplayer too, but one is a grappling hook that you can use.
Yeah, I saw that. That looks
dope. Pulls you places, so that that increases that slow speed combat kind of thing. You know, because you can pull yourself from pile to pile now instead of running towards enemies that are running away.
That's true.
Or I think you can pull them towards you even. But either way, that would also be cool to have in the multiplayer.
Yeah, maybe you can't pull on a person in multiplayer, but you can use any kind of surrounding objects. I mean, they have it in Apex Legends. I mean,
yeah, and usually it works out nice because it makes a faster dynamic to the game, and it adds like these weird things you wouldn't think people would do.
They should make a squad-based Halo game. Like, not like Halo or anything, like, or not Halo, I just said Halo. Not like Destiny or something like that, but like, because that'd be funny. But they should make, like, not champions, but, you know, like, class-based. Like, you're maybe an engineer, a sniper, but like, and then you have, like, kind of like Battlefield. I guess that'd be the best way to put it. Battlefield, you pick, you know, they have epic, huge battles, but you can put it in the scope of, like, regular, maybe. And then have them have, like, special features like the shields or the ability to repair ships and heal people. But I don't know, because Halo, you really don't need to heal because you heal by yourself.
Yeah, and they only do a really baby version of that at the beginning of levels sometimes where you can choose what you want to start with, where it's BR or the SMG. But really, you can drop it right away and go pick up the other one. You know, you're not stuck with it, and you don't get some kind of bonus for choosing a BR.
Yeah, also loadouts. That needs to be a thing. That's the one thing that Halo always kind of, like, because of Call of Duty and the options of weapons, like, I mean, whether or not they're the same goddamn thing with a new skin, they're different, and you can put attachments on them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Halo has tried to answer this with, like, you know, cart systems before and other things, but, like, there's just not that many weapons.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the case of a real strength becoming a weakness because it's been played too long.
Exactly. It used to be cool.
Well, yeah, at first, in Halo 1 and 2, being able to pick up any gun you wanted was awesome, and being able to pick up any two guns you wanted at the same time was awesome. You know, a plasma pistol and a handgun or whatever. Really cool. But they've leaned on it for a while, and you're right. Now the class system is really cool. Having loadouts and things like that where you can earn skins instead of, you know, other things.
Exactly. Like, there's no... I feel like once you've played it a couple times, like, it just becomes old. Yeah, like, I mean, a couple times in the sense of us. Like, we've been playing as we were kids, and it's still like they've added maybe a handful of guns.
I have,
like, what the heck?
No, I haven't bought a Halo since Halo 3.
I bought Halo 5.
Master Chief Edition was free, I think, on Game Pass.
So I bought that too. I bought that too. It broke the first day.
But I want this one to be good, and I think I'm gonna try it out if I've got the money to go pick it up.
I'm playing it. I'm not even gonna lie, but like that's the thing is I just don't understand why old recipes don't always work. And it's because people change. Games change. Their interests change. And I think you can still find a way to keep core Halo and not have 10 weapons. I mean, I'm not even sure what the weapon count is, but it just feels like 10. I mean, it was cool in you know, Unreal Tournament days, you know, when you were just trying to find the gun and kill somebody. But, like, people want to be skill-based in a certain way. And having the ability to customize and change your weapons and have them with you from the beginning of the round, you know, that's how some people show skill. You know, they don't want to have to be able to pick up the same gun, and then it's just like, oh, whoever shoots who first or whatever. No, I mean, like, that's also skill technically, but it's like, it's not casual fun.
So that's something I really enjoy in Call of Duty Zombies nowadays, where you kind of earn more guns, and then you can start off with what you want.
But that makes sense.
Customize how you want with skins and things.
That makes sense, though. Like, you know, going from, you're progressing from zero, you know, one to a whatever.
Yeah.
But in multiplayer, you're supposed to be starting off, you know, on an evenish playing field.
Yeah, that's true.
And I feel like they're taking that way too seriously with the whole, like, everybody gets an assault rifle. Like, that's just too strict. It's just too strict. Especially for the most powerful Marine, Space Marine, whatever the hell you want to call him, ever. You know, what the heck?
He'll beat you with his hand.
All right, Bobby, hit me with another game.
All the Pokemon's coming out this year.
That was my only other game. Oh, so really? We'll talk about that. So Pokemon What was it? Brilliant Diamond?
Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl.
I can never remember the first word before the pearl or diamond part because they just keep adding stuff.
Yeah.
And then the other one is going to be Mr. God Pokemon, right?
Pokemon Arceus.
Is it Arceus? Arceus? Arceus?
I always say Arceus.
I'll have to ask my daughter later. But, well, I mean.
Let's ask Ash Ketchum.
So, Arceus is going to be the RPG.
Yeah, that's meant to be the Breath of the Wild, like, open world, super incredible Pokemon game that we all thought.
We would have 10 years ago.
Well, we all thought that the last two were going to be, like, the first ones they released.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On Switch.
Yeah. I forget. Not Sun and Moon, Sword and Shield.
Yeah, exactly.
Sword and Shield.
And honestly, they were good. You know, they were pretty cool.
Yeah.
But this one's meant to be what we all expected them to be.
And then they're actually making... And then Brilliant Diamond and
Shining Pearl.
So the new Diamond and Pearl games, they're meant to be like the old... Like, not old school, but they're meant to be the upgraded versions of traditional Pokemon. Whereas yeah. Arceus is going to be... Instead of them trying to combine the two, maybe, as they've been with Sword and Shield... They're going to keep them separate now, where you still get your old school. Well, I don't want to say old school because it's not old school, but traditional Pokemon experience. And then you have a more like new school RPG style.
I didn't think about that. Them releasing just one version. It's kind of odd, and I wonder if there's some kind of twist to that we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it if that's the fact, then they're opening up a new avenue for one income or revenue. Because they have a whole other title franchise to go off of because, you know, they can play off of that. Or they can make it a live service game where they only maybe sell a new cartridge or whatever every couple of years. But that's Arceus 2 or whatever. But they could, you know, sell DLC and expansions for this game because if it's an RPG, they could make it, you know, anything. They can keep expanding on it with new episodes or whatever you want to call it stuff. They can have a battle pass or something like it in the game if they really wanted to.
Yeah,
which would be revenue. So I think that, you know, when somebody probably pitched this, they probably were like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. It hasn't been, people have been complaining that our games are changing. Why don't we just give them updated versions like we always have been doing? You know, the graphics are going to look better, but it won't be a new, like a brand new experience in the sense of like, it's so different. But the thing is, you can still make that good in Pokemon. That's their philosophy at this point. It's just like, we don't want to make people angry, but we also want to go down this route. How do we do that? And they've created that route.
I'm excited for the final Pokemon, too. Because I have this idea that they're going to make a game to end it all. Where they were just like, all right, we can't make as much money off this anymore. It's not worth, you know, working on it as much. Which might be forever down the road.
Yeah.
But I believe they have a project already... ready, where it's going to be like either episodic or one massive game where you start off in Pallet Town and you kind of just work your way through every game that's been made.
I am so down for episodic game content. I mean, I never really got into those like Walking Dead and whatever they were, you know, like the Telltale games. I was sad when they closed down and everything, but I was never like, I didn't like the art style really. But like if you can make truly like video games with episodic expansions, I think if they're priced the right way and the content is worth it, I think it's a really good way to go because you're still generating revenue consistently, and because you're not providing a huge product, you can do it more rapidly and repetitively. But it keeps your game in people's minds as well.
Yeah, and people might be more willing to accept that too. Like, okay, here's a redone game from Pallet Town through the Elite Four. This is what you get. Continue after that. But instead of being $60 remaster like everyone complains about, it's a $25 or $30 thing because there's going to be 30. Eight more.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be... And honestly, I would even say half. You know, you could be like, you get... You know, from Pallet Town to the fourth badge, you know, and then because the thing is, they can make them really high quality, and they can make them in smaller chunks. But the thing is, you won't be yearning for it. Like you could beat it in a day if you really sat down to do it. But yeah. You can also binge watch a whole season of a TV show in a day. That's not Netflix's fault. It's your fault. So what I would say is that you could But like Netflix, here's what sucks about Netflix: they had to produce these movies, right? But if you could get on a schedule of content where you have a new episode chunk coming out every 3 months, you know, that's perfect. That's like every 3 months, I would have no problem throwing you $25.
I was going to say it would have to be at least every 6 months for me if they were going to do 4 badges at a time, because I'd be mad if I couldn't do the whole game in a year.
No, yeah, it should be something where they have a roadmap and it's not like they're not going to diverge from it. Like, it's going to come out.
Yeah.
And like really have it set up where they can do it and like have the resources so that things are not always, so it's not like, oh, we finished this, let's move on to this thing. Like, have different teams making the next set. Mm-hmm. So there, it's always in a rotation. And then you're not getting stagnant with the same people doing the same thing. So I think it'd be really cool, and it'd be cool for Pokemon. Because of what it is and because of how they have to kind of make games for it, and what people expect, I think that'd be a really digestible way for people to do that. And because it would bring new and old users. And that's what that's all companies want. They want the old people that never left, and they want the new people that are growing up.
Yep.
So, and I mean, nothing wrong with that. And they could even maybe follow the real Pokemon story instead of Ash, you know, or they can maybe follow the Ash guy. I almost said Ash is the real story, but they could follow the Ash story maybe in the video games instead of the
red,
the red and blue one. But I think it's going to go for video games because we're getting a little far along in time. We're going to move on to current TV and anime shows we're watching and enjoying. I'm going to start off with anime because I do have my little list here. One show that I didn't expect to be anything, honestly, because the name is crazy. I don't even know if I'm going to pronounce it right. I watched it on Hulu. In about 2 days. There's only like 13 episodes. There's only one season right now. It's called Arafureta. From Commonplace to World's Strongest. Really good anime. If you like those kind of like classical stories where a guy gets messed up, gets really strong, and like it has a moral obligation to help people but doesn't like showing it, then, you know, like some of the like, I think that's like an anime category. I probably could figure out the name. It's really good. Really good anime. Some people have mentioned that they don't really like the animation of the enemies or like the monster creatures because they use CGI, whereas the standard anime format is used for like the characters and the backgrounds and stuff like that, sometimes, for the most part. Also, like if the characters use anything from those monsters, I don't want to give too much away, but like if they're wearing it as armor, the armor will be CGI. So I think it's cool. I don't, it doesn't really bother me. But I really like it. Really good storyline. Definitely recommend it. And I'm really sad there's only 13 episodes. But it did come out last year. I think it was 2020. So hopefully they're making another season. You got any shows, man? You got any shows? I got to pull up my Netflix history, to be honest.
The greatest anime that I've watched recently was probably Invincibles.
Oh, yeah. Invincibles is really good. I mean, that was like probably the highlight of the beginning of 2021 when it comes to like American cartoons.
Yeah, it was nice. And then, you know, this I consider this
any TV or anime.
Yeah, so like I guess I would consider this anime, but it's animation. But Rick and Morty's coming soon this month, so ooh-wee. That'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, was it the, I don't remember, I looked it up earlier.
I think it was the 20th, you said, or something like that.
On the Netflix end, they have... I actually just watched... Well, I'm not even finished it. It's too good to finish it really fast, but I'm like halfway through The Way of the House Husband. I am watching it in English just because it was something I wanted to watch while I was like eating lunch and stuff. But it is so, so goddamn funny. I'm not even going to like ruin it at all. Just like go watch it. If you like slightly serious comedies, but like, I mean, literally these are funny comedies, and you like cats... Highly recommend. The episodes are also pretty small. They're only like 15 to 18 minutes long, I think. Oh, and then real quick, Love, Death, and Robots. If you guys have watched that, me and my wife, Britt, were really into that show when it came out. Season 2 or part 2 has come out. We also already watched half of that in one sitting because the episodes are about 7 minutes. So, you got any more shows, boss?
No, I haven't seen much animes. Yeah.
We've been working a lot lately. You, especially you with your classwork last month, was nutty. I think the only other TV show in general, Netflix is, you know, there's a lot of stuff we probably watched, but the other thing that kind of stood out was like the Guide to Meditation and the Guide to Sleep show. I'm going to consider that animation because it's animated. Definitely highly recommend if you want to get into like meditation or like need help sleeping. The one for sleep, definitely watch when you're trying to go to sleep, though, because I didn't realize that. It's not just a show about sleep. It tries to help you go to sleep. So, yeah. Next up is going to be movies. We're going to be doing a whole podcast about the movies category when it comes to like going back to the movies and stuff like that. So I don't want to get into that kind of thing. But, and this can be movies we've watched here at the house. And, of course, you know, obviously we did go see a movie last night for the first time in theaters, which was awesome. What movie was that, Bob?
That was
The Quiet Place, Part 2.
Yep.
I almost said The Last of Us, so I don't feel too bad.
Yeah, I was blanking on it.
I mean, it was, you know what? It was a good movie, but it wasn't, it honestly, don't feel bad because it wasn't that memorable. Like, I thought it was good, but it wasn't crazy good. We'll talk about that movie in the next podcast when we talk about the movies, but I think I still want to digest more of that movie. But what have you watched any? Well, we watched a couple movies this month, obviously. But anything stick out to you?
I watched The Iron Giant,
like the cartoon Iron Giant.
Yeah,
I mean it's a good movie.
Every once in a while, I enjoy that.
You just rewatch it.
Yeah, it was okay.
Just rewatch. Just fuck it. Just rewatch it.
Been a while.
So we watched. Recently, we watched Cherry on Apple TV Plus. That was pretty good. It's like a Army PTSD movie mixed with some drug use and stuff like that. It's got Tom Holland in it, Spider-Man, if you don't know. It's pretty good. Check that out if you don't have Apple TV Plus. I'd recommend it because it pretty much just comes with like being an Apple subscriber. The Mitchells versus the Machines was that animated movie that came out a little bit ago.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about it. It was really good, honestly. I really thought that was a great family movie. We watched it on, I think, on Mother's Day or something like that. But it was dope. It was a really good movie. Really well made. Like, I really loved Into the Spider-Verse because that's the people who made it. But this was, like, almost better, I feel like.
Well, you know, it was one of those movies that come around, you know, that's going to be pretty big, like Incredibles or, you know, something like that. I feel like it's Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Like, it'll probably be on that level.
Yeah. I hope they make some more, honestly. There was some HBO movies we watched, too. I know we talked about Mortal Kombat in the last podcast.
Oh, man. What was the zombie one? I forgot.
Oh, Army of the Dead.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, we watched that at home.
I think it's the most popular movie on Netflix right now.
It is.
For streaming.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was cool.
Is it on Netflix?
I think it was.
It was HBO. I don't even remember it anymore.
I feel like it was Netflix.
Check on one of those. But that was a great movie. And the whole like Zack Snyderverse, bring it back. We'll just say it now. Bring it back. Bring it all back. Bring Zack Snyder to everything. It was amazing. It was a great movie. And I love that it wasn't literally just a zombie. Because I really don't like zombie movies. But I love that like I actually read something about him talking about it. Because Warner Brothers rejected it. It's like, he's like, it's not a zombie movie. Like, it's not just a zombie movie. And I'm like, I get that. It's not just a zombie movie. It's better. It's better than a zombie movie. Yeah, it's like Resident Evil category of zombie movies. It's not just a zombie movie.
Yeah, there's a nice underlying plot to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, too. It's got a lot of cool different things that go into making it great.
Yeah, and I didn't even know, like, I mean, I don't really know much about the story behind it, but the helicopter pilot, Britt found out, whatever, was actually supposed to be some guy, but, like, some stuff happened, but there was, like, some conspiracy. There's some a controversy around him and some other stuff, so they ended up putting in digital put in the other actor, and she was,
pilot?
Yeah, she was great. I loved her. She
That's
was
cool.
like
I
witty.
I would never have guessed that they like threw her in there as CGI.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if CGI is the right term because then they would like generate her. I think they literally like somehow put her in. I don't know. It's weird. But if they like cut it in a way, like, because I mean, if anybody could do it, Zack Snyder could. I mean, he literally recut Justice League. So
they could have had her just come do the parts, and because she's a really good actor or something,
it just worked. Yeah, they responded and it
worked. Her in.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. And then we're almost getting to about an hour and a half here, so we're gonna go ahead and end it here with the last thing. This is just gonna be the time here where we talk about anything we want to talk about. Back, we got a couple minutes left. We can talk about anything that we didn't really mention in the categories of the podcast today. So I know one thing that I want to mention is that I will be kind of doing that blog for my writing stuff, and I decided that before Bobby told me to, not in this podcast. And I'll get started on that tomorrow.
Good.
So yeah, that's my one thing. And also, I want more paintings for my bedroom once my desk is out and in the studio. So I just had to say that.
I've been really enjoying The Walking Dead Saints vs. Sinners, or Saints and Sinners for VR. It's incredible. I mean, I haven't played a VR game that has felt like a real video game as opposed to an experience. But this is one, you know, where you're following objectives, and if you want to do this, you're doing it. It's like a side quest, or you're doing the main quest, or maybe you're just going out to collect things in a certain location because you want to build a certain weapon, you know. There's a lot to it, and it makes me... It kind of opened my eyes more to what VR could be, even though I've been enjoying it the whole time.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the best thing I could say to a segue about the VR blog post just one more time, because I go into that exact kind of topic with how VR has changed but hasn't also changed in certain ways. So check out that blog post, because I go into that a little bit more in depth as well. It's cool when you can finally get a real video game experience from a VR.
Yeah, and you know, ever since we went at TwitchCon and we signed up for that experience and tried out the headsets and with, you know, the real cameras all over the room and stuff.
That was Sansar.
Whatever it was.
Oh, wait, not that one. No, you're talking about the one we were in that back room.
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, that was, they closed down.
I mean, well, they had a real room-style VR setup,
though. Yeah, they had the towers.
Yeah, the cameras everywhere that tracked motion, and it was incredible, and ever since I tried that, I was like, man, I really love VR. You know, I want to get into it, and even just having Beat Saber is fun.
We went to, just to kind of off-topic, but we went to that place, Summit, whatever. It was like a Dave & Buster's, but they had Beat Saber. Like, if they had, it was an HTC Vive, like, hooked into, like, this whole, like, contraption with this TV. It was really cool-looking. And it would, like, lower down, like, via, like, some kind of conveyor belt.
You pay for it, and the cables slowly lower the headset and controllers down to you.
And you get to play one song for, I don't know, like, $2 or whatever. But it was interesting to see it there. It was cool, actually.
It was more cool, honestly, for me to see people playing it and getting really excited about their score and, like, the crazy big smile on their faces as they were doing it.
Look, Ma, I can beat sabers.
Well, for me, that was like, yeah, you're going to be a VR player. Like, this got you.
Also, in the blog post, I talk about VR user base and why it's important. Check it out now. And I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I need more friends.
So we're hitting that hour and a half mark here in a little bit. So I want to go ahead and pull a plug so we can get our listeners back to their everyday lives of eating McDonald's, because that's what I want to do right now.
Till next time,
yeah. So, everybody, stay nerdy, friends, and peace.
Peace.